Hey everybody, welcome to the Single Tracks Podcast. My name is Jeff, and today Matt and I are going to be talking about long travel 29ers. 29ers are going long. While the wheel size has been around for more than a decade now, we're finally seeing widespread availability of long travel bikes with big wheels. In this episode, we'll talk about the latest long travel 29er developments and what it means for the tweener wheel size. And actually, I was just looking back. This is like almost exactly a year since we first did a podcast episode about 29ers. And at that time, we were just starting to talk about 29er downhill bikes. But a lot has changed since then. There's been a lot of new bikes. So let's start off by talking about some of the newest ones. Matt, the Scott Ransom is one that we heard about just a couple weeks ago. Well, officially like a week ago, but This podcast will be delayed a little bit. But anyway, the Scott Ransom, that's an enduro bike, right?
Yeah, I was just looking at it yesterday, and that's a 170 mil travel front and rear 29er or 27. It looks like also if you wanted to use 27 wheel size still on it.
Yeah, and that one is going to be one of the longer travel, I mean, aside from the downhill bikes, one of the longer travel 29er bikes that we'll see. One of the things that I thought that was really interesting is the shock that they're using, or like the suspension design. Mm-hmm. They're calling it the Scott Fox Nude TR shock.
Right.
And basically, yeah, like has a knob on it that lets you adjust the progressivity, if that's a word, of the shock and the suspension so that you can give it either a linear feel or a more progressive feel. And is that something that other bikes are using? To me, it sounds completely new, but maybe I just missed it and others already do this.
I haven't seen it on the shock itself. I know I was over at Gorilla Gravity the other week and was talking to them about some of their bikes, and they have on their 29ers, it's not adjustable travel, but it is like a flip chip, and it does change the suspension rate a little bit. I think they call it like plush or crush mode, but it does change the way the frame uses the suspension and I guess the progressivity a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, for a lot of people, it just comes down to personal preference. I mean, some people prefer a more progressive feel. Some people like a more linear feel. What's your preference?
I tend to go on the more progressive side. But I think most of the downhill bikes I've ridden are more linear feeling, just to really keep as much traction on the ground as possible. But I like a little bit of progressive, especially in the rear, just for popping off trail features or jumps or anything like that.
Yeah, I like progressive too, like having that sort of really plush, like small bump sensitivity when you're not hitting big stuff, but then at least knowing that the suspension can really ramp up, like if you do hook off of something or hit something really hard.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so going in sort of reverse order of the bikes that have been at least announced or released this year, the next one is the Yeti SB150. And again, this is an enduro bike, was just announced in August. What do you know about that bike, Matt?
You know, that was, 2 years ago that they came out with the SB55? Yeah, and like 2 years ago, 140 mil on a 29er was a long travel 29er. And so now they've got, it's 150 in the, yeah, obviously SB150, it's 150 mil rear travel, and then they have 170 mil fork on it. So it's their new enduro 29er. I think Richie Rude's got a race or two under his belt on it. But yeah, it's a big thing for Yeti and another long travel 29er.
Yeah, and you mentioned the SB5.5. Are they getting rid of that bike, or do you know what's happening with that one?
I don't know officially, but it does sound like that one's going to be phased out from what I've heard, just rumors.
Yeah, they probably don't want to announce that while people still have those like sitting on the showroom floor. But yeah, what's interesting to me, I mean, it uses that same Switch Infinity suspension design that, you know, if you look at it, it's pretty complicated looking, and it's got a lot of parts, and it's kind of bulky, honestly. But on this one, they managed to sort of reconfigure it, and they say that the SB150 will actually fit a water bottle in the front triangle, which is nice for some of us.
Yeah, because before it was just on the bottom of the down tube.
Yeah, yeah, they've flipped it like 90 degrees, right? Like the whole configuration, yeah, which is interesting. And then also, I like to point out that Yeti is going to the metric system. They used to, you know, like title all their bikes based on the amount of suspension in inches, but they were kind of a holdout there. Nobody is really doing that anymore. I guess Pivot, is Pivot still talk about the Mach 429? Do they still do that one in the 529?
I'm not sure. Yeah, their trail, I think, yeah, it's the Trail 429 that just came out. They just switched up how it's titled, I guess.
Yeah, well, at least it'll be easier to compare, and you can kind of get an idea of how much suspension the various bikes have once they're all in the metric system.
Right.
So after that, also in August, the DaVinci, which is a brand maybe is not super familiar to everyone, but it's a Canadian brand. They announced their Wilson downhill bike is going 29er. That's one that you wrote up, and I guess we just saw the press release. We haven't actually ridden one, but what do you know about that bike?
So it's a 29 option. They will still have a 27 option for the Wilson, but it's a pretty popular DH bike, especially up in Canada. I don't see many DaVincis down here where I'm at in Colorado, but it's like as soon as I got into Whistler, there were DaVincis all over the place. So it's definitely a lot more popular up in Canada, it seems like. I don't think their 29er version is like dramatically different than the 27 version they're offering, but now it is another option that the World Cup users or World Cup athletes are already using it at some of the races.
Yeah. Moving on to the Fazari LaSalle Peak. And again, this was August. A lot of news came out in August around Crankworks. So in case you missed it, this is definitely going to get you caught up. So Fazari is a direct-to-consumer brand. They sell their bikes online only. And so because of that, they're, you know, known as sort of offering potentially a better value than some of the big box or the especially the brands that you're going to find in your local bike shop. So the LaSalle Peak is an Enduro 29er, and it's 150 millimeters of travel, which is seems to be pretty common among these Enduro bikes that are 29ers now. I was just looking at it. They have an entry-level carbon build for $35.99, and that includes a dropper post. So seems like a good option. Yeah, it's probably one of the most affordable. I think we'll talk about Kona. Kona has a slightly more affordable aluminum long travel 29er, but the Fazari LaSalle Peak definitely looks interesting.
Yeah, seems like it's getting a lot of buzz lately, and yeah, it might be one worth checking out.
Moving on to the Orange Strange 329. That's a downhill bike, and as far as I know, it's still just in the prototype phase, so our rider Jarrell saw this bike at Eurobike this year. There was the prototype on display there in July, and he had a caption on one of the photos that said that the company had to add weights to the frame because it just felt too lightweight to some of the test riders.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I don't know, maybe they're like making a joke or I don't know. Or they're just like, look how light this thing is. It's kind of hard to believe that anybody would ask to put weight on a bike. But I guess that's possible. Do you like a heavier bike for downhill, Matt?
I don't know. I mean, you definitely feel the weight after like a couple of laps on a downhill bike. But it is nice. I mean, pickup speed feels more stable. I think stability is, you know, if you're riding a downhill bike, that extra weight definitely comes in handy as far as stability.
Yeah. Yeah. These weight plates were like on the bottom bracket area or like bottom of the down tube. So,
right.
Yeah, I guess maybe there is some truth to that. But it was an aluminum bike too. It wasn't like it was carbon or anything. It didn't look super lightweight, but who knows.
Yeah, do you know the weight off the top of your head on?
No, I don't think they had any weights, and it's definitely at an early prototype stage. The bike looked pretty rough, but it definitely is something that they're testing, and I think maybe they have some athletes riding on it as well. So keep an eye out for that. Okay, so we mentioned the Kona process earlier. So the process 153 was updated, I think, in April, like right around Sea Otter time. The process has been a really popular bike for a long time, the 153 in particular. And the announcement, I believe, was that there were carbon and aluminum versions now of the process, right? Was there, do you know if there was a, there was an aluminum version first? Is that what happened?
As far as I know, they had the carbon ones first.
Oh, okay. So yeah, now they have, aluminum. The aluminum is priced at $29.99, so under $3,000. It's got 153 millimeters of rear travel. And again, it's a really popular bike. A lot of people really like the process, and it seems like a really good choice for an Enduro 29er.
Yeah, they're big bikes.
And they have a 27.5 option as well, and that one's been around for a while. Aaron Chamberlain actually used to ride one of those. I guess he still has it, but he has the 27.5 edition. And knowing him, I'm guessing he wished that he had the 29er now.
He liked the big wheels?
Yeah. Well, and honestly, that's, you know, I'm close to needing a new bike. And, you know, I've been thinking about this for, a couple of years now, like thinking about what is my next bike. And I really wanted something with more travel, but I was hesitant to get a 27.5 bike just because I've got such an investment in 29er gear, you know? I mean, I've got the tires and the wheels and forks and like all the stuff that goes with that. And I was like, I don't know if I want to introduce a new wheel size to my life.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot to consider, a lot to change over.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm stoked about it now to have all these options. And for sure, once I do get a longer travel bike, it's going to be a 29er.
Set in stone.
Yes. So White has a bike called the G170 that's been a pretty popular enduro bike for a while, and it's always been offered in 27.5 only. But while I was at Sea Otter Europe in Spain in June, I saw a new version of the G170 that's a 29er. It's called the G170 Works, and White is, they're not getting rid of the 27.5 version of the G170. They're just adding this Works build that uses 29er wheels. And a lot of that was driven by their athletes, by people who want to race the bike. It's a really nice looking bike. The G170 Works 29er has a carbon front triangle, alloy rear. And what's interesting to me about White, I wasn't super familiar with the brand before Eurobike, but you know, they're based in the UK where a lot of the trail conditions can be pretty nasty, kind of all year round from what I understand. You know, a lot of wet, muddy trails and pretty rough, like rocky stuff. And so White takes an approach where they build their stuff to be just like super durable. And you know, it's not just like, that's some marketing speak. Like you look at the bike, there's actually a lot of features on there that are designed to, you know, keep water and mud out of, for example, your dropper post, or your seat post collar. You know, they've got this special seat post collar that, the hardware is actually like lower down on the seat tube. It's not like up at the top of it, which is how most bikes are.
Interesting.
And then their bearings, they use these bearings that I forget what they call them. I'm sure they have some proprietary name, but the bearings are basically like designed to be super sealed and watertight, and they guarantee the bearings for the life of the bike. I mean, I guess other companies do that too, but yeah, the White ones, they definitely look like they're designed to like just ride the bike underwater, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it sounds like a bike that's really going to hold up over time.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of dedicated White fans out there. They're kind of hard to get in the U.S. There is a U.S. distributor now, but they're not taking off super fast here yet. But I think once people try them out, especially like in the Pacific Northwest, like I could see people really appreciating the bikes there.
Definitely, yeah.
All right, and the last one I have on the list is the DaVinci Troy, which is, I guess it has the least amount of travel of any on this list. It's more of like a trail bike, right?
Yeah, I think they have it listed in their trail category, 140 mil, 29er, and they do have the 27 also. But yeah, they received an entire update, so it's a new generation of it in July, and I think it's one of the best looking bikes that I've seen this year. It's a really good looking bike.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really interested to see what people think of that bike once they get a chance to ride it. So yeah, we said that the DaVinci Troy is the bike with the least amount of travel. So what would you say qualifies as long travel for a 29er?
A lot of these that have been coming out in the past year or even 6 months really are over 145 or over 150 mil. Like 2 years ago when the Yeti S-Speed 5.5 and, I can't think of any other bikes off the top of my head, but with 140 mil rear travel and then 160 mil fork, like that was a long travel 29er at that time, and
yeah,
just more bike than anybody was really thinking about. So now it seems like the feat of engineering is putting 160 or 170 or 180 mil travel on a 29er and pulling it off.
Yeah, and what's interesting is the amount of travel too. I mean, it's kind of it's a moving target. I mean, like you said, just last year or 2 years ago, people would have said 130, 140 millimeters was long travel. But then the other thing is when you compare it to like the 27.5 bikes, most of these 29ers, they lop off 10 or 20 millimeters of travel and they call it the same bike or at least the same style of bike. So, you know, if you're looking at an enduro bike, you know, with the 27.5 wheels, I think a lot of people would probably put that cutoff at like 160 millimeters, but we're seeing it is very common for 29ers with less than that, with like say 150 millimeters being considered enduro. What about on the downhill side? I'm not super familiar with what's out there, but these 29er downhill bikes, how much rear travel? Like what's the most travel that you're aware of in a 29er?
200 or 203, something like that is what.
Oh yeah.
Just right around 200 is what I've seen on some of the downhill bikes that have come out with.
That's about as much as you would see on any bike, right? 27 or 26 inch wheels. I mean, how high can it go?
Yeah. I mean, I think it seems like they're keeping them right around 200 millimeters. That GT Fury was, so they have a 27 and 29. The 27 is 200 millimeters. And then by swapping it with 29 inch wheels, you lose 10 millimeters of rear travel. So it's 190. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, 10 millimeters of travel, you're pretty much right there.
Right. Yeah. And somehow we skipped over the GT Fury. That was one that was announced just before Crankworks. And then you actually got a chance to ride around on that bike. What did you think of it? That was your first experience with a 29er with that much travel, right?
Yeah. It was the biggest bike I've ever been on for sure. I mean, it was good. It will get through just about anything. I mean, it really seems like a big push for it is just the way that they can maintain speed.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows, or anybody who's ridden a 29er can feel the difference in carrying speed versus a 27. And it seems like that's the push. A lot of racers are asking for 29-inch wheels because they can carry speed for longer. Mm-hmm. And it just makes sense to try it on a downhill bike. If you're really trying to win, then
yeah,
you're gonna want that wheel size on some of those courses.
Yeah. Well, was it like mind-blowing to ride that bike? Was it instantly like, oh man, like I don't want to ride a regular downhill bike again, like I only want to ride 29ers? Or do you need to get a few more test rides in on other bikes?
I don't think it was mind-blowing, but the benefits are definitely noticeable just as far as carrying speed, rolling over objects and obstacles, things like that, rollover capability, traction in berms, just laying the tires down and having that much more rubber around berms to go even faster. The benefits are definitely there.
Yeah. So why do you think we're seeing this push for longer travel 29ers? What's changed in the last couple of years?
I mean, it seems like there's a big push from racing just for that carrying speed in enduro and downhill. I know riding an unreleased long travel 29er up in Whistler, talking to the marketing manager from there, he was saying that that was one of the selling points to keep one of the athletes on the team that they were trying to renew with was that he wanted a 29er to race on the EWS because a lot of the racers are switching over to 29ers. And so that was a big push for their development was putting 29-inch wheels on a bike so that they can keep their athletes happy and just keep them competitive against other brands.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like there's definitely a push from racing and definitely from a consumer's standpoint, it seems like too. You come out with a 29-inch wheeled mountain bike that has 170 millimeters travel, like you're going to be generating a lot of conversation. The Trek Slash is the other bike I was thinking of that came out, 2 years ago, and it had like 150 mil rear yeah. and 160 mil in the front, and it went from a 27 to 29, and that bike had a ton of buzz at the time when it came out.
Right.
So it'll get people talking, I think, also for sure. And
yeah,
consumers see a bike like that comes out, and they want to know what it rides like also.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that we see that all the time with stuff sort of trickling down from racing. I mean, that's where it's the most competitive and where the performance really makes a difference. I mean, all of us, you know, we get excited about a bike that's like, oh, it, you know, performs better, it's faster, or it, you know, it's better at technical stuff. Like, we get excited about that, but we're just out there having fun. Like, these guys, that's their life, that's their living that they have to make. And so they are the ones that are pushing that envelope. And so, yeah, it's cool to see how that's developing, and I'm excited for it to trickle down to the rest of us for sure.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good way to put it, is trickle down. What the top athletes are asking for, then it gets changed with the brands and the manufacturers, and then consumers kind of get the benefit as far as like racing, pushing development of mountain bikes.
Yeah, one of the brands, I don't remember who it was, maybe it was Comensal, that they developed like a 29er for one of their athletes. I feel like it was a downhill bike, and they weren't really planning to put it in production, but then a lot of people were like, hey, I want to buy that. And so I think what they ended up doing was just making like a limited edition. They did a run of like 10 or 20 of them or something.
Oh, really?
But I'll bet you now they're thinking like, no, you know what? We should just make it, because I'm sure it's sold out immediately. And, you know, I mean, we see what the athletes are running and we want it. I mean, it's not just for the elite. I mean, unless it's something that's like truly, you know, you got to be an athlete to be able to handle it, or I don't know, get the most out of it. I think most of the stuff, I mean, mountain biking is pretty accessible. Like, we all want to feel like we're part of the race and that we're at that level.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think another thing that's probably driving this too is the component availability. You know, a few years ago, it would have been difficult to find a fork, say, that, you know, has enough travel for 29er wheels. And also the tires as well. You know, we're seeing the more aggressive knob patterns, and, you know, people, that to me is kind of coming from the ground up too, which I think is interesting. The, with tires, that people are, you know, for a long time people focused on the weight and they wanted a tire that rolls fast. But I think as more and more people experimented, you know, consumers, they realized like, hey, you know, that those downhill tires, like, they might be heavy, but man, like, it just, I feel way more in control. And so I think the companies were starting to put those more aggressive patterns on 29ers, which had traditionally been, you know, cross country trail bikes. And then the bike company said, well, hey, if they've got like a Minion in 29, like, let's put it on a, you know, now we can make a long travel bike that's actually worthy of the Minions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like, everything's sort of catching up to this point.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, we've been in this like constant wheel size flux where the wheels are getting bigger, or they're getting fatter, or they're, you know, all this stuff. And I think the fork manufacturers, and I mean, even Boost, you know, a lot of people love to hate Boost, but I think maybe in some ways that standard sort of opened things up and made wheel size like less of a constraint. And so
yeah
we're able to see this stuff. I mean, it wasn't, I visited Niner several years ago and was talking to them about this. I think at the time their longest travel bike was the WFO, and I think maybe even that was like right around when they were discontinuing it. And you know, I asked one of the people there, like, well, like, what's the deal, what's the constraint, why can't you make, you know, a longer travel 29er? Is it just impossible? And, you know, at the time it seemed like it is. And clearly now we know it isn't, but I don't think it was just like a matter of the math working out, you know, like it wasn't like some engineer's like scratching his head and, you know, like drawing stuff out and then erasing it and being like, oh, I'll never make this work. Like, yeah. I think, you know, like geometry and physics, like none of that has changed, but I think what has changed is the component availability and some of the things that maybe were constraints, like, you know, wheel widths and chainstay stuff. Like, I don't even understand all that, but it does seem like it's all related. And so there were like a series of kind of roadblocks that had to be dealt with before they could actually make it work.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you on Boost and this Super Boost Plus, which is also something people aren't going to be happy about it. But the two bikes that I've seen it on this year, one was that Firebird 29er that came out, 170 mil mm-hmm. 29er. And then the other bike that I rode up in Whistler was also 170 mil 29er. They had to use Super Boost Plus just to widen the chainstays and keep them short enough to where you're getting traction and it's not just an insanely long bike. So yeah, it seems like that Super Boost Plus, which I don't know if it'll really explode for all these bikes or anything, but at least some brands are using them to get the geometry to where they want on these long travel 29ers.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I do wonder too, if we'll see more Super Boost and you know, eventually Pivot will be able to say, I told you so. I mean, they did it like years ago, right? Like at least 2 or 3 years ago. And maybe they were thinking more people would follow them, but so far, yeah, not really. But I think you're right that we will see more of this. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what all this means for the 27.5 wheel size and what consumers should think at this point. Stay tuned. You can't see me, but I'm wearing an awesome Singletrax hat right now. It's actually the reason my voice sounds so amazing. Okay, so maybe not, but you never know until you get a hat for yourself. Go to shop.singletrax.com to find Singletrax hats, t-shirts, stickers, tubular headwear, and can coolers. Shipping is free within the USA, and your purchase helps support the Singletrax podcast. That's shop.singletrax.com, and thank you for your support. We're back. So Matt, what do you think all this means for the 27.5 wheel size? You know, that was a fairly new development. I mean, I don't know, maybe it wasn't that recent, but it seems recent to me that everybody was switching to 27.5. So is that going to go away now?
I mean, 29ers are just rolling out like left and right. It's pretty crazy. And it doesn't seem like I definitely don't think the brands want to just like eradicate 27.5 because consumers would be so pissed off and like,
yeah,
just super angry. Like, it seems like 29 is, it's not, it's when it was sort of like reintroduced, what, in the early 2010s, it was more intended for like short travel XC bikes. And now it's an option for any sort of category of bike.
Yeah.
So it seems like, yeah, if you're going for a downhill or an enduro bike, you can sort of pick your preference. I want a 27 or a 29.
Do you think most consumers can tell though? I mean, if you rode a 27.5 and a 29 version, is there much of a difference? I mean, I know Aaron and I did at Sea Otter 1 year, we tested the Norco, I think it was the Optic. Mm-hmm. And at that time they were offering the bike in 27.5 or 29. And we got like the exact same size, exact same build, just two different wheel sizes. And then we like went out for a test ride and switched bikes halfway through.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And as I recall, there wasn't like a whole lot of difference. And I mean, I'm sure I could have told myself there was because, you know, I'm a 29er guy, like I said before. And so like, I only buy 29ers, but I wonder like if you were coming at the sport brand new, you didn't know anything, you didn't own anything, you know, how would you know? Like how would you pick? Do you think people would have a preference?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if you don't have that point of reference to go off of and you're an entry-level mountain biker, like one of my other bikes is a 2014 Trek Remedy 29er, and that was also like one of the first sort of longish travel bikes to be on a 29er that started to generate a lot of conversation. But my girlfriend mostly rides it, and she's not like an advanced mountain biker or anything, But it's useful for her because she gets the confidence from the 29-inch wheels.
Yeah.
She gets that roll-over capability. Like, it makes rock gardens less intimidating, and it makes you at least slightly more capable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's benefits, like, as far as just, the learning curve of mountain biking, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
On the flip side, she's also only, like, 5'2", so it's a tall bike for her to be on.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me when you see brands. I mean, there's so many different approaches, and we're going to talk about each of them, I think, here. But one of the approaches is where smaller sizes use 27.5 wheels, and then the larger size bikes use 29 wheels for that reason, because for shorter riders, it makes sense. And the geometry really does get complicated if you're trying to put, like, 29-inch wheels on an extra small frame. That doesn't always work out. So that definitely makes sense to me.
Yeah.
One of the things people say too is that the 27.5 wheels are, like, more playful or more agile. Is that something you've experienced yourself?
Definitely. Yeah. So this is, like, something that came up for me when I had that Cannondale Scalpel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 29er and it's, like, a trail XC-ish bike. And it was, like, super fun on jumps. And so I took it to one of our local little bike parks, Ruby Hill. And there's definitely, like, jumps that it's good on and jumps that it's not. And it's better on sort of jumps that are on mountain bike trails, like more slope style-ish, like long tabletops. But on more BMX style dirt jumps, like, it's noticeable. Like, putting a 29er on it, obviously, it's just, like, it's a lot more wheel to get over tighter jumps and stuff like that. And then in Whistler on that GT Fury 29er too, that was the one place I noticed it was on really tight sections of trail where you're sort of maneuvering around rocks rather than jumping or rolling over them. I mean, it takes a little bit more planning to work 29ers around sections of trail like that.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I mean, there are, for the right riders, I think for experienced riders like yourself, there definitely is a noticeable difference. And I think that's why the brands are offering a choice. Some too, you know, I mentioned that some, like, cut off at a certain frame size, you know, they go from 27.5 to 29. And then some of them I've noticed overlap, you know, like the mediums and larges you can get with either wheel size. And then, like, the more extreme sizes are a set size. And then we're seeing too with some of the brands that offer a choice, like Norco, that sometimes it's the bike itself that you can swap out, right? Like, you reviewed the Fury and basically you just swap out the rear triangle, right? And then it goes to a regular 27.5, or is it a 27.5 plus?
27.5, yeah. So it's, you swap out the seat stay and then some headset cups to kind of adjust the reach for that as well. So it's a seat stay, some headset cups, and then it's a 27.5.
So it's literally just the seat stay? It's not a full triangle that you're replacing?
Yep, just the seat stay. Yeah, that was the word I got back from GT, just the seat stay. So kind of an interesting swap to be done there.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't seem like you should be able to do that, but I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure it's plenty strong. So the other thing that we've seen for a while now too, is that companies that are selling 29ers like to tout that they're 27.5 plus compatible. And this is one of those things that I've kind of, like, I don't know, shrugged my shoulders over at times and, you know, just said, like, well, sure, you know, 27.5 wheels will fit most 29er frames just as it is. But we're seeing a lot of companies actually offer, like, some kind of geometry adjustment as well, right?
Yeah, because it's not, like, a perfect match between 27.5 plus and 29, is it?
No, it's not. We actually measured it and were surprised that it was, like, I want to say more than an inch difference. I mean, if you look at it, you kind of, like, squint your eyes, you'd be like, oh yeah, those are the same size. But if you hold them side by side, and then especially if you consider the, like, most people are going to run a lower tire pressure with the 27.5 plus than they are on the 29er. And so that sags down even more once you're on top of it. So it is pretty different. And then you run into the clearance issues. I mean, that's the thing that a lot of these bikes that are officially cross-compatible do for you, is they do generally have wider stays in the rear so you can fit those wider tires. But that's not always it's not always necessary. You know, I've converted my 29er to 27.5 plus and back again. So it's definitely something worth trying. And it's a nice option to have on these longer travel 29ers.
So when you converted your bike to 27.5 plus, I mean, was it a very noticeable difference in how it rode compared to a 29er?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the obvious stuff is that it lowered the bottom bracket significantly. And that's part of why we did these measurements, because we were like, how much does it really change it? Because a lot of companies, again, they're coming out at the time, they were coming out with these bikes that they said were 27.5 plus compatible, but there was no like compensation for that. And, you know, a lot of them just shrugged it off and said, well, you know, it's close enough. But we measured over an inch drop in the bottom bracket, which is significant. I mean, I felt tons of pedal strikes, and you know, it wasn't enough for me to like go back immediately. Like, it was something that I was willing to deal with just for the benefits of, you know, having a smoother ride and being able to roll over stuff better. But, and then I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast or not. I've certainly shared in the forums, but over time, I tried different configurations with like a 29er wheel up front and 27.5 plus in the back, and then vice versa.
Yeah.
The combo that I like the best out of all sort of four, like regular 29er, 27.5 plus, and then like a mix, is having the 27.5 plus in the rear, just because it kind of slacked the bike out more. And yeah, it just gave a better feel. Like, it made the suspension feel better. And I think part of that comes down to tire choice as well. Particular tire and rim combo that I've been using is just not great at cornering. So I didn't really like it up front.
Interesting.
One of the things too I wanted to talk about is the sort of the difference between the geometry of these bikes. So again, we're seeing a lot of bikes that were formerly 27.5 only going to 29er. And with that change, we're seeing slight differences in the geometry, right? So head tube angle, that's a big one people focus on. On the 29ers, they're usually what, like half a degree steeper? Is that what you've been seeing?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if I've been too keen on noticing the differences, but we just did that big geometry article. I'd have to look again on the differences between geometry on there.
Yeah, I think, you know, the few that I looked at, the head tube angle on the 29er version is usually about half a degree steeper, and the seat angle is different by half a degree as well. So there is some compensation for that. It's not the same frame with like different size wheels on it. There definitely is a difference that requires like a whole new bike. It's definitely not the same bike anymore.
I think that was one of the big things that we noticed is like in that same article is that the 29-inch bikes, their geometry is progressing a lot more, or at least catching up to the 27.5 geometry a lot quicker than it had previously.
Yeah, and there are some brands, interestingly enough, too, that lately have been sticking to 27.5. You know, it's not a mass defection yet, mm-hmm. although it does seem like more people are moving to 29er than not. But one of the notable examples is Santa Cruz. They, just this year, earlier this summer, they announced the updated Bronson and the 5010, and both of those are still 27.5 bikes. So do you think did they miss the boat there, or, you know, was that intentional, or what's your thought on that?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, their Blur is a 29er, right? That's their XC bike. And then they still have the Hightower and Hightower LT, which is a 29er long travel.
Yeah, but the LT is only, what, like 140 millimeters, probably? I mean,
I think it's 150.
Okay. Well, it's 150. It would qualify, I guess, for our long travel 29er, but it's still not, it's not up there. It's not 170 like a lot of these.
Yeah, right. They don't have like a Nomad 29er or anything yet. That will be an interesting one to watch because, I mean, Santa Cruz is really, they've really stuck with the Bronson, and Nomad is what it's known for doing, and as what it's, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. So,
yeah. Well, it's interesting because they are one of those brands that a lot of, I mean, definitely consumers look to them, but I think others in the industry do as well and sort of see them as like the standard bearers and the progressive, you know, company. And like, so I'm honestly torn. I don't know what it means. Either Santa Cruz is right and everybody else is foolish to be chasing yeah. this, you know, long travel 29er thing, or this is one of those rare occasions where Santa Cruz is kind of behind and they're playing catch up.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see on their next bike debuts whenever they update. Well, shoot, I mean, they're almost their entire line has just been updated, so might be a while.
Yeah, yeah, that's what's crazy about it is that a lot of these companies too, I mean, it's hard to, developing a new bike takes a long time, obviously, and getting production ramped up and all of that. And so to see all of these kind of dropping at the same time, I mean, that means that people have been thinking about this for a while. And
yeah.
I don't know if there's like crosstalk between companies and people kind of know that like this is going on and they're like, oh, I heard that other company is doing a long travel 29er. Like, we need to get on that ASAP. And then to see Santa Cruz, it's just like, ta-da, we got some 27.5 bikes updated. It's kind of like, wait, were you guys talking to everybody else? Because, you know, that's last year.
Yeah.
And then one of the companies too that did sort of the opposite, more of an about face, was Giant. They, when 27.5 first hit the scene, they were really early to incorporate it like pretty much through their whole line. I mean, from cross country to their, you know, longer travel bikes. And at the time, I want to say that they made a stand and said as much as like, we believe 27.5 is like the way forward and like that's what bikes are going to be and like we're just going to go all in. And now even they're updating some of their bikes to go back to 29er, right?
Right, yeah. It was the Trance that just switched to 29er, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it got less travel than the 27.5 version. Less travel, slacker angles, and then also became a 29er, which is kind of like an odd odd mashup.
Yeah, that one's really interesting to me as well. That, and Giant too, I mean, it's a huge company. I mean, it's one of the biggest, and to see them make that commitment, they're probably not going to do that lightly. I think maybe they're seeing it. And again, if racing is what's driving this, then you got to listen to your racers. I mean, to Santa Cruz's credit, they were one of the first, if not the first, to do a 29er downhill bike with the V10. So they were the ones we were talking about a year ago saying like, holy cow, how did they do that? They beat everybody to it. And so it's interesting that they weren't seeing that for their other bikes, their enduro bikes. But then again, maybe they were. Maybe they know more than we do.
Yeah, they pushed when the V10 29er came out. I mean, that was what really kicked off a lot of the conversation.
Yeah, really interesting. Maybe they did it all to fool everybody.
Yeah.
They're like, put it out there and people are like, okay, Santa Cruz says we're doing long travel 29ers. And then Santa Cruz is like, psych.
Right.
That's not what we're doing.
And now this weekend for the World Cup finals or the championships, a bunch of people are going to be on 29ers.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what the results look like. Yeah, see an analysis of that. Aaron did a really good analysis a year or two ago about the different brands, like which ones are the most winning. I think it'd be interesting to see how wheel size plays into those race results and see if there is really like a qualitative difference.
Yeah, definitely.
We talked a lot back and forth about the wheel size thing. So should consumers really focus on wheel size? I mean, for a while, I mean, wheel size has been in flux, it seems like, for a decade now. I mean, since the 29ers started getting popular. So, but then over the last couple of years, it seemed like we kind of moved past it and we were like post wheel size, but here we are focusing on it again. So what do you think? What should people do when they're looking for a new bike?
I think whatever makes them happy is what's going to be the best bet. And I think like, again, consider what trails you're going to ride the bike on. If you're really into hitting like a ton of jumps, not to say that like the 29ers don't jump well or they can't jump as good as a 27.5, but a 27.5 wheel size is just going to be better in a lot of cases through jumps, through tighter sections of trail. you know, or if you just want to carry a ton of speed all the time, then maybe a 29er is the way to go. And you just want to crush rock gardens and get over obstacles, and maybe a 29er is the way to go. But yeah, anymore, it's like you can have the same bike with both options. So it's really a matter of preference.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like if you could do like a blind demo ride of various bikes and just pick whichever one feels the best to you. I mean, you can do that, right? Like you can go to one of these big demo events. Matt, you just wrote a good article about ways to track down, you know, a bunch of demo rides, but, you know, go to one of these things and instead of like asking the guy at the demo tent, like, what size wheels does this bike have? Or, you know, looking closely at the tires, like just hop on a few bikes without even worrying about it and see what you like, you know, make some notes about what you liked and didn't like about each bike and then just go with that.
Yeah.
That's one of the things too, that like Gary Fisher was talking about in our interview with him, that bike companies, especially Trek, are trying to get away from this talk about all the stats. You know, I mean, when you look at a bike, like it's got this size wheels and it's got this much travel, and they're trying to get people to look at bikes as more of an experience to be had. And, you know, we saw like computer companies, like Apple Computer was one that they kind of tried to get away from that. Like how fast is the CPU and how much RAM does this thing have? And try to just get people to be like, no, it's just a laptop. It's a laptop and it looks really awesome and you're going to love it. Like, I think maybe we could deal with more of that in the bike industry.
Yeah, I think you're right. Moving away from talking about specs all the time and just focusing on having fun on your bike.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I will say too, there was some debate on your article actually about the trail bike geometry and how that's changed. And some people brought up this article that I believe was it Enduro Magazine or?
Yep.
Yeah. Enduro Mag wrote a piece about how geometry numbers are meaningless and, you know, people shouldn't really worry about them or focus on them, which a lot of people that resonated with them for sure. But my feeling is that, yeah, while they are confusing and, you know, you can't just pick a bike based on that, they still are, it's a good way to compare bikes, honestly, you know, especially if you're not going to demo bikes. I mean, if you can demo every bike that you're considering buying, then you should do that and just ride whichever one feels good. But if you are like most people and you got to look online and do your research and build spreadsheets and stuff, the numbers can be pretty helpful. Good starting place for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I definitely don't think the geometry is meaningless. I mean, it's a good way to get, you know, in a ballpark of, if you're looking, you want an enduro bike and you see a bunch of bikes with a 65 degree head angle and one has like a 67, it's going to be,
yeah,
okay, why is this one so much different?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if it was meaningless, then we wouldn't be talking about it all the time.
Right. Right. And the other, you know, the flip side of that too, is that, and with what Gary Fisher was saying, is that then a lot of it becomes the marketing speak where they're like, you know, this bike it climbs as well as it descends, you know, like you hear that all the time. And it's like, well, how much, you know, how can it, first of all? And second of all, like, every bike says that. So I need to have something that's more like quantitative that I can compare across bikes and that's not just a bunch of hype.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And especially if you are looking at like, buying a brand new bike, I mean, I think looking at geometry does help. If you're looking at 10 different brands and, you know, only seven of them have the most modern geometry. I mean, this is like geometry that engineers are going over constantly to get you the best feeling or best riding bike possible on the market right now. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty helpful. Like if I'm spending $6,000 on a brand new bike, then I want it to be the best bike for $6,000 that I can get.
Yeah, definitely. And it's crazy. We're seeing now too, these numbers are getting very precise. You know, a bike will have a 65.7 degree head tube angle.
Yeah. And
I mean, yeah, they are really like slicing it thin and getting these bikes dialed in as well as they can. So definitely something to pay attention to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, this has been a fun discussion about Long Travel 29ers. Who knows in 1 year what this conversation will be like, if we'll still be talking about Long Travel 29ers or who knows, Long Travel fat bikes. We'll see. That's all we've got this week. Remember, there are a lot of ways you can keep up with Single Tracks beyond just listening to the podcast. You can subscribe to our email list where we'll send you a recap of the most popular articles of the week every Thursday. You can also follow us on social media where we post a lot of breaking news and pretty much everything that we publish during the week. So thanks for listening. Talk to you again next week. Peace.